An unnaturally safe world. Unprecedented shelter. How safe is today's world, and what is fossil fuel's positive role? While we are taught by our knowledge system, on the delicate nurture assumption, to think of safety as something our planet naturally provided until destroyed by fossil fuels, the reality is that in its natural, unimpacted state, the planet perpetually poses many dangers to human life, and fossil fuels have made it unnaturally safe. Nature gives us an extremely dangerous environment in the form of a naturally dangerous climate and naturally dangerous predators, large and small, including microscopic predators such as infectious diseases. Throughout history and in the unempowered world today, unempowered human beings have spent enormous amounts of time trying to protect themselves from these dangerous forces, with very little success. The enormous natural danger of the planet is a major reason why, as the human flourishing hockey sticks illustrate, life expectancy was so low for so long. Unempowered human beings simply could not produce enough protection to overcome nature's dangers. Today, empowered by fossil fuels, we keep ourselves unnaturally safe by producing unprecedented amounts of protection from natural dangers, including 1. Unprecedented shelter, 2. Unprecedented sanitation, and 3. Unprecedented medical care. Let's start with shelter. Shelter is a timeless essential for human beings because it helps to protect us from the ever-present menace of climate, as well as large predators, such as bears, and many small predators, such as disease-carrying mosquitoes and flies. When human beings are unempowered, they spend enormous amounts of time producing shelter, and yet still only manage to produce shelters that are vulnerable, fragile, dirty, and uncomfortable. To take a modern-day example, consider the situation of Florence, a resident of Zambia, as told by energy and environmental expert Bjorn Lomborg. As a widow, Florence is the sole income provider for 5 children and a grandchild. She scrapes together just $38 each month by selling ground nuts and vegetables at a desk outside her house and renting out one of its 2 rooms. Her family of 7 crams into 1 room. There is no running water and no toilet. That one room is 10 by 10 feet, 100 square feet, for 7 people, and she can barely afford it. Contrast Florence's situation with that of the typical person in the empowered world, who can readily afford shelters that are unnaturally and amazingly protective, resilient, clean, and comfortable. The unprecedented state of shelter today depends on numerous fossil-fueled, shelter-related industries, including 1. Shelter building, 2. Temperature control, 3. Fence building, and 4. Clothing. Today's unprecedented shelters are possible only because today's shelter building industry, like the food industry, employs a massive staff of fossil-fueled machine laborers that cost-effectively do incredible amounts of work for us. These machine laborers include excavation machines that enable one human to dig up and move massive amounts of earth to make room for the foundations of sturdy buildings. Grading machines that enable one human being to easily flatten uneven, bumpy patches of land to make them suitable for large level structures. Lifting machines, such as cranes, that can lift enormous amounts of weight that, if they could ever be lifted before, took years of slave labor. The machines we call power tools, which enable human beings to combine their dexterity with large amounts of power for precision tasks such as hammering, fastening, and sawing. Compacting machines that make the ground under buildings solid. Cutting machines that clear trees to make way for human habitation. Paving machines that build the amazing roads that interconnect our shelters. Mining machines that extract all the raw materials involved in our amazing buildings, from iron and coal for steel, to aluminum, to copper, to sand, and high-heat machines used to transform mined materials into vital, usable materials such as cement, steel, and plastics. Without these completely unappreciated fossil fuel machine laborers radically increasing humans' productive ability, high-quality shelter would be out of reach for the vast majority of people in what is today's empowered world. And that's just the building of shelter. Fossil-fueled machine labor is also fundamental to our unprecedented protection from dangerous temperatures. Above all, the perennial death threat of cold via temperature control. One of the most overwhelming shelter challenges in an unempowered environment is the timeless need to produce warmth when it's cold. While today's temperature focus in public discussions is on the phenomenon of being too hot, historically and to this day, the far greater direct danger for human beings is being too cold. I'm not just talking about super cold places like Scandinavia. Even at moderate northern latitudes, cold requires an amount of heat production that can be overwhelming. For example, on the American frontier, a typical household would consume 4,000 cubic feet of wood per year, which weighed 80,000 to 160,000 pounds. That means on the average day, a household would need 350 pounds of wood, chopped into pieces small enough to fit in a fireplace. In unempowered times and places, that chopping must be done with manual labor, as must the felling of trees, as must much of the transportation of felled trees, such as onloading and offloading. Thus, keeping warm in unempowered places consumes a large portion of life. But it gets worse. The result of all this time spent on acquiring heat in unempowered places is not the level of comfort that we in the empowered world enjoy when we think of heat, which is a consistent, controllable level of heat distributed throughout our shelters with little or no fumes. In unempowered places, wood, or in the poorest places, animal dung, instead provides only concentrated heat around a multi-purpose open fire, often used not only for warmth, but also for cooking and heating water. This more natural way of heating shelters requires that individuals indoors breathe in amounts of smoke and fumes that are far greater than today's world's worst outdoor air pollution. Having an open fire in your kitchen is like burning 400 cigarettes an hour, says one leading researcher. And household air pollution is still the largest single health risk factor for Indian women and girls. Breathing fumes from an open fire is rampant in the unempowered world today, and literally billions of people live this way. Enormous amounts of time and effort to produce heat that is uncomfortable and accompanied by extreme air pollution. That's life in a natural shelter. In the empowered world, our heroic fossil-fueled machine laborers enable the average person to affordably and cleanly heat their shelter on demand. For example, heating machines, the most cost-effective being natural gas furnaces, can enable a person making $25 an hour in a cold part of the U.S. to effectively and cleanly heat their family's home for less than $2 a day, just 5 minutes of their time. On top of that, in the empowered world, we can cool our shelters when the weather is too hot, something that is inconceivable in unempowered places, leaving aside incredibly cost-ineffective practices of trying to cool oneself with ice transported from cold regions. Miraculous, cost-effective air conditioning, cooling, machines make it possible, even in a hot summer in Phoenix, Arizona, for a $25 per hour worker to cool their family's home for just over 3 minutes of work a day, usually work done in an air-conditioned building. What a wonderful thing our fossil-fueled machine labor world is, and what a dangerous travesty they were not taught to appreciate it and to fear its loss. Fossil-fueled machine labor is also fundamental to our unprecedented protection from predators, something that is completely taken for granted in the empowered world. Throughout history and in the empowered world today, predators have been a massive threat to our bodies and to our food. For example, energy and environmental expert Michael Schellenberger shares that when he visited the Democratic Republic of the Congo, many people we interviewed were upset about baboons and elephants from nearby Virunga National Park, a protected area for wildlife, raiding their crops. Given the widespread hunger and poverty, losing your crops to wild animals is devastating. I was told that one woman was so upset about losing her crops to an elephant that she died of a heart attack the next day. And I was told that a chimpanzee had recently killed a 2-year-old boy. To deal with these natural threats and save human food and human lives, human beings must produce protections such as fences. This can also avoid the need to kill the animals that are attacking food and people. But building fences takes a lot of work. And when cost-effective machine labor is not available to do the work, that means a lot of human laborers. For example, as recently as 1850, 4% of the adult male labor force in the United States was devoted just to repairing fences. Today, fossil-fueled machine laborers help us produce fences and other protections so affordably that most of us in the empowered world don't even think about the issue. A final way in which fossil-fueled machine labor shelters us from nature's danger is via the incredibly cost-effective production of clothing. Clothing is, in effect, shelter for our bodies, particularly necessary when we are on the move. Absent cost-effective machine labor, clothing is painstaking to produce, leading to a lot of time devoted to acquiring clothing with little to show for it. Before widespread empowerment, most people had only several items of clothing for their entire lifetimes. The difficulty of acquiring clothing was so bad that it was common practice in Europe to try to steal clothes off the dead, a practice that rapidly spread the disease that had killed the deceased in the first place. It was also common for women to have only one dress, which they got married in and which served as funeral attire for them to be buried in. Today, machine laborers make low-cost, high-quality clothing available to everyone in the empowered world, as well as easy to donate to the unempowered world. We use machines to grow the raw materials for clothing, or in the case of synthetic clothing, to drill for them, to produce fabrics, to sew fabrics into clothing, to transport clothing. All of this makes clothing production so cost-effective that a poor person can buy a very warm winter jacket at Walmart for $50. Even at just $12.50 an hour, that's 4 hours of work to be warm throughout an entire winter. Once again, amazing fossil-fueled machines make this naturally dangerous planet an unnaturally safe and comfortable place to live. And once again, our knowledge system leaves us dangerously ignorant of fossil fuel's fundamental role. With the various shelter industries, as with every other industry, the time that fossil fuels free up for mental labor makes possible highly specialized, innovative fields, where enormous amounts of human mental labor are engaged in producing building materials, construction methods, and clothing factories, and leading the innovation that makes them better and better. Without ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy or its equal, the available mental labor these industries depend on would not exist. The final aspect of fossil fuel's fundamental and unacknowledged role in shelter is fossil fuel materials. Fossil fuel materials are the basis of the many vital synthetic materials used in buildings, from carpets to insulation to showers to waterproof roofing materials to memory foam beds. And they are used to provide many of the most affordable and versatile forms of clothing, from an incredibly cheap winter jacket to an amazingly waterproof winter jacket. Without the fundamental value that fossil fuels provide via ultra-cost-effective machine labor, freed-up mental labor, and materials, the production of shelter as we know it would collapse, and families would regress toward spending inordinate amounts of time to acquire a fragile home, ineffective and dangerous heating with no cooling, meager protection from other species, and uncomfortable and dirty clothing. With more of the value that fossil fuels provide, billions more people can have amazing, affordable shelter. All of this is essential context for making good decisions about fossil fuels. And all of this context is ignored or denied by our knowledge system in its embrace of fossil fuel elimination. The same is true for another vital form of protection that fossil fuels provide, the sanitation that makes Earth's naturally dirty environment unnaturally clean. An unnaturally safe world, unprecedented sanitation. One of our knowledge system's perpetual attacks on fossil fuels is that they make our environment unnaturally dirty. These attacks make any proposal to eliminate fossil fuel use seem like a boon for a clean environment. But nothing could be further from the truth. Today's fossil-fueled world is unnaturally clean, and in particular, sanitary. Contrary to the idea that a natural life is clean, all life involves waste. It involves waste from the animals we eat or use for labor, from the plants we use and eat, and from our own bodies. Thus, producing sanitation is always a crucial human task. When human beings are unempowered, their ability to produce sanitation is overwhelmed by the amount of waste that they and the rest of nature produce. For example, as recently as the 1890s, New Yorkers were, according to anthropologist Robin Nagel, literally shin-high or knee-high in this muck that was a combination of street gunk, horse urine and manure, dead animals, food waste, and furniture crap. Today, in the unempowered world, many die from diseases that emerge from poor sanitary conditions. According to the World Health Organization, 2 billion people lack basic sanitation, such as toilets, and an estimated 10% of the world's population consumes food irrigated by wastewater. Diarrhea alone kills roughly 432,000 people annually. One major reason why unempowered places have such bad sanitation is that because they must spend so much time producing food and shelter, they have limited time and other resources to devote to sanitation. Consider the sanitation challenge of protecting one's water supply from human and animal contamination. Before mass empowerment, and still in many places without mass empowerment, a common dilemma in deciding where to drill a water well was to weigh two factors. The closer to your home the water well was, the more easily accessible water would be. But it would also be closer to human and animal waste, meaning it would be more contaminated. For those of us in the empowered world today, with running water, that would seem like an easy choice. Put the water as far away as necessary to keep it clean. But for unempowered people, that means extra hours of their time to get that water in a bucket and haul it home for drinking or for washing clothes or for bathing. So most people chose to keep the wells close to the house, even though that means more dangerous and dirty water. This example captures the low level of sanitation in an unempowered, barely impacted environment. It is overwhelmingly dirty, and people have little time or ability to do anything about that. Contrast this with today's empowered world, which has unprecedented affordable sanitation. We can dispose of all our waste almost effortlessly, achieving levels of hygiene that were once unimaginable. And this might cost us $100 a month for our combined water, sewer, and garbage bills. That's just over $3 a day for amazing sanitation. At $25 per hour, that's 8 minutes a day to be cleaner than a king ever was. We call fossil fuels dirty, but it's the world's massive use of fossil fuels that produces this state of cleanliness. One reason is that fossil fuel freed up time makes possible a highly specialized innovative sanitation industry, something that is impossible in an unempowered world. And today's sanitation industry runs on fossil-fueled machines. Consider just a handful of the machines involved in modern sanitation. Excavating machines that dig the sewers that separate drinking water from wastewater. Water treatment machines that take water from a lake or a reservoir and make it safe for human use and consumption. Garbage trucks that remove waste from where we live and work. Garbage processing machines like waste separators, rotating trommels, and compactors that sort and handle the different types of garbage, from hazardous materials to recyclables. And garbage burning machines that transform certain kinds of garbage into usable energy while dramatically shrinking the amount of space the garbage occupies. Modern sanitation also uses many materials that come from fossil fuels, including plastic garbage and recycling bins that are lightweight, durable, and easy to clean, PVC plastic, the material of choice for household sanitary sewer pipes, thanks to their low weight and long lifespan, and petroleum-based tarps for landfills that reduce odors, reduce fire hazards, and reduce risks from disease-spreading animals and insects. Once again, we see that fossil-fueled machine labor, freed-up mental labor, and materials are fundamental to the livability of our world. In this case, our unnatural cleanliness, a cleanliness that is widely ignored by our knowledge system, and a cleanliness that, when it is all too rarely acknowledged, is treated as totally unrelated to fossil fuels. One particularly vicious danger that modern fossil-fueled sanitation protects us against is small predators such as bugs. Many infectious diseases reach us via bugs. Mosquitoes transmit malaria and yellow fever, fleas transmit the bubonic plague, and lice transmit typhus. Contrary to the perception that diseases like malaria can only occur in tropical countries, malaria used to exist in most of today's empowered countries, including the United States. Fossil-fueled empowerment changed that. In the empowered world, we use fossil-fueled machine labor to destroy the environments of dangerous populations of bugs. For example, in the case of malaria, we drained the wetlands where the bugs laid their eggs. This involved diesel-powered excavators to dig drainage canals and other fossil-fuel-powered construction equipment to build levees and reservoirs. We also use fossil fuels as the material basis of pesticides and spray them using fossil-fueled planes. While pesticides are demonized, they have saved hundreds of millions of lives, at least. For example, the National Academy of Sciences credited the fossil fuel-based pesticide DDT with saving 500 million lives. With sanitation, fossil fuels haven't taken a naturally clean environment and made it unnaturally dirty. Through fossil-fueled machine labor, fossil-fuel freed-up mental labor, and fossil-fuel materials, they've taken a naturally dirty environment and made it unnaturally clean. If billions of others are to live in as clean an environment as the empowered world does, it will require more of the value that fossil fuels provide. And without fossil fuels or their equivalent, the now empowered world would regress toward its naturally dirty and unsanitary state. All of this is essential context for making good decisions about fossil fuels. And all of this context is ignored or denied by our knowledge system, which glorifies unimpacted nature as clean and says that all we need to do to achieve a cleaner, healthier world is get rid of dirty fossil fuels. An unnaturally safe world, unprecedented medical care. Fossil-fueled shelter and sanitation protect us from myriad natural threats. Still, they do not fully protect us from small predators, especially microorganisms that want to get into our bodies. Thus, we must produce internal protection against these predators, along with the many other natural ailments that can befall the human body. That internal protection is the province of medical care, curing our bodies of any ailment that befalls them, whatever its cause. Medical care is different from the other productive activities I've discussed in that our knowledge system actually acknowledges, to a large degree, that it's improving, with major positive consequences for human life. What is completely unacknowledged, though, is that fossil fuels are fundamental to modern medical care. We cannot think responsibly about our health if we do not recognize that modern medical care, like every other productive area of life, depends on fossil-fueled machine labor, fossil-fuel freed-up mental labor, and fossil-fuel materials. Let's start with mental labor. Today's massive medical care industry, with millions of people in the U.S. alone focusing on medical care full-time, is possible only because fossil-fueled machine labor is so cost-effective at producing everything else we need. If it were not for all the time that fossil fuels free up, there would be no medical care industry as we know it. And the medical care industry as we know it, widely acknowledged as lengthening and improving lives, is powered by fossil fuels. Consider just some of the fossil-fueled machines that amplify and expand the abilities of medical practitioners. Magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, machines that give doctors a 3D image of what's going on inside our bodies so they can diagnose previously undiagnosable ailments. fetal monitors that enable doctors to monitor the health of babies before they are born, refrigeration machines that keep temperature-sensitive medicines like vaccines at the right temperatures, heating and cooling machines that keep hospitals at the right temperature, anesthesia machines that give doctors the power to safely sedate us, infant incubators that save the lives of premature babies by giving them a safe environment as they develop, and computing machines that access and keep track of massive amounts of medical information. The whole world of modern medicine is a world of fossil-fueled machines. These machines are only as widely available as they are because we have low-cost, on-demand, versatile, global-scale energy to produce and power them. Machines are so prevalent in medicine that hospitals often spend almost 50% of their budgets on energy costs. And yet we're not taught to think about fossil fuels when we think of medical care, or medical care when we think of fossil fuels. We're only taught to think of ways that fossil fuel side effects can harm us. Fossil fuel materials are also indispensable to modern medicine, with medications, syringes, medical equipment, gloves, and masks all made of oil and/or natural gas. It's hard to find something in a hospital that isn't substantially made of oil and gas. All the benefits of fossil fuels to medical care, fossil-fueled machine labor, fossil-fuel freed up time, and fossil fuel materials have been vital for saving countless lives from COVID-19. Take the unprecedented development and distribution of vaccines, which involved millions of specialists in the field sharing knowledge, high-powered supercomputers, refrigeration to keep vaccines at negative 70 degrees Celsius, negative 94 degrees Fahrenheit, ramp-ups in production and distribution by fossil-fueled factories and fossil-fueled transportation, and medical equipment made of fossil fuels, such as the syringes and gloves used to deliver vaccines safely. That's the kind of safety our empowered fossil-fueled world makes possible. And yet with COVID-19, as with anywhere else in medical care, fossil fuels have been regarded as irrelevant or villainous. Our knowledge system did not tell us to be thankful for the fossil fuel industry's role in dealing with COVID-19. Instead, it used highly dubious methods, which I will discuss later in this chapter, to blame COVID-19 on air pollution from fossil fuels, with zero mention of what COVID-19 would be like without the ultra-cost-effective energy that made possible not only vaccine development and distribution, but our whole modern medical care system. This level of ignorance is literally deadly, because it guarantees that we will make decisions to restrict the energy use our health depends on in the name of health. Let's summarize the state of the world's safety and its relationship to fossil fuels. Thanks to humanity's fossil-fueled production of shelter, sanitation, and medical care, fossil fuels haven't taken a naturally safe planet and made it unnaturally dangerous. They've taken an unnaturally dangerous planet and made it unnaturally safe. And for our world to become unnaturally safe for billions more people, we're going to need far more of the ultra-cost-effective energy and materials we currently get from fossil fuels. This is crucial context for making rational decisions about energy going forward, and yet our knowledge system ignores or denies all of it, to the point that it is common to think of today's unnaturally, amazingly safe fossil-fueled world as unnaturally dangerous because of fossil fuels. An unnaturally fulfilling world. A final, completely unacknowledged way in which fossil fuels make our world unnaturally livable, that is crucial context for the way we think about energy, is fossil fuels' fundamental role in the unnatural opportunity for fulfillment that today's world has. If human flourishing is human beings living to their full potential, the opportunity for fulfillment for the typical individual is an essential aspect of what it means to have a livable world. We want to live in a world in which we have a lot of opportunity to be fulfilled. If we can't, what is the point of everything else? As I discussed early in this chapter, from a human flourishing perspective, opportunity for fulfillment comes down to three issues: how much time we have on Earth, how much control we have over that time, and how fulfilling our options are for how to spend that time. Just as in the realms of nourishment and safety, our knowledge system engages in denial of today's unprecedented livability and ignorance of fossil fuels' fundamentality with regard to opportunity for fulfillment, portraying today's world as unnaturally unlivable and fossil fuels' role as negative. A life without fossil fuels, a more natural life, is presented as one in deep harmony with the rest of nature, absent the superficial distractions that industrial, fossil-fueled life has created. I am sympathetic to this narrative in one respect, but only one. I believe there is a lot more many of us could do to pursue fulfilling lives, and some of that includes a healthier relationship with the rest of nature, such as spending more time outdoors. But the fact is that there has never been so much opportunity for fulfillment, including having a rewarding relationship with the rest of nature, and fossil fuels are a fundamental cause. Let's be clear, natural life, life in an unempowered environment, is not conducive to fulfillment, including a good relationship with the rest of nature. As we've seen, an environment without massive amounts of time-freeing machine labor is an environment where most of one's time is spent acquiring the most basic necessities in their crudest form. Such an environment, for the average individual, means a life of frequent tragedy, with infants dying, children dying, teenagers dying, adults dying in their 30s and 40s as the normal way of life. It means being in mostly the same place, unable to see most of the wonders of the world. It certainly doesn't mean the ability to luxuriate in the most beautiful, inspiring parts of nature. Lack of mental stimulation, drudgery, repetition, tragedy, monotony, these are not conducive to fulfillment. By contrast, in today's empowered world, where thanks to fossil fuels, machines do dozens of times the physical work that our bodies do, we have unprecedented opportunity for fulfillment. To use the three aspects of opportunity for fulfillment I laid out earlier, we have one, an unprecedented amount of time on Earth, two, unprecedented control of that time, and three, unprecedented options for what we do with that time. The amount of time we have, and above all, the amount of control and options we have, is evident in three completely unprecedented fossil-fueled opportunities for fulfillment that the typical individual in the empowered world has today. Fulfilling productive time, many forms of fulfilling nourishment and protection, and many forms of fulfilling leisure time. It is crucial to appreciate these areas of unprecedented, unnatural livability and their total dependence on fossil-fueled machine labor and the time it frees up for mental labor as well as leisure activities. Fulfilling productive time. In today's empowered, fossil-fueled world, there are limitless types of productive work open to us to support ourselves. Thanks to fossil-fueled machine labor and the time it frees up, as well as uniquely versatile fossil fuel materials, the world today is full of different industries related in one way or another to nourishing, protecting, and fulfilling us. These include materials industries, mining, chemical, pulp and paper, steel, transportation industries, automobile, aerospace, boating, shipping, information, construction, finance, real estate, computers, electronics, pharmaceuticals, telecommunications, and many more. Not only can we choose fields of endeavor that most interest us, but a large portion of the work is mental labor, where we can engage our minds with interesting challenges. Because every industry, thanks to the virtuous circle of empowerment, is continuously developing, there are always new things to think about. Unlike the lives of other animals, which involve doing the same things over and over, human beings get to live a life of forward progress where we build on our achievements. Part and parcel of a highly specialized world, full of mental labor opportunities, is the ability to spend upwards of 20 years on education. It's easy to decry the phenomenon of child labor in the past or in poor places, but child labor is part of the vicious circle of unempowerment. If you can barely produce enough to survive, you may need your children to work hard so they can survive, and there is little time for education. The existence of limitless educational opportunity in today's world is not something people would associate with the world's massive fossil fuel use, but that opportunity emerged and endures because of the world's massive fossil fuel use. Personally, I feel grateful to live in a world where I have the opportunity to use my mind in interesting, fulfilling ways every day, and get paid for it. In the unempowered world, past and present, that opportunity simply does not exist for most people. While we are encouraged today to have a lot of gratitude for the good things in our lives, such as great productive opportunities, we are not at all encouraged to have gratitude to the fossil fuel industry that makes today's world possible. To the contrary, our anti-energy knowledge system tells us to blame the fossil fuel industry for many of the world's problems and promises us a wonderful, opportunity-filled world that we will have when governments get rid of this industry. This 180-degree wrong evaluation is both unjust and dangerous. If we don't associate our ability to choose fulfilling work with fossil-fueled machine labor and the time it frees up, as well as fossil fuel materials, and if we see fossil fuels as a negative force in our world, we will make very, very bad decisions. Decisions that could literally destroy the world as we know it. Fulfilling nourishment and protection. Another amazing aspect of opportunity for fulfillment in our fossil-fueled world that is both unappreciated and completely dissociated from fossil fuels is fulfilling nourishment and protection. In any era, human beings need nourishment and protection. But thanks to fossil-fueled machine labor, freed-up time, and materials, nourishment and protection have gone from insecure, time-consuming, and often painful necessities to sources of comfort, pleasure, and meaning. Take food. While 200 years ago, many even in the wealthiest countries were worried about their next meal and would frequently use an old piece of stale bread as a plate, today we have achieved mastery over food. Consider today's widespread availability of restaurants, which provide the experience of enjoying tasty food effortlessly in the company of friends and loved ones. An amazing meal at a restaurant with our favorite people can be a great source of joy and meaning. And if we appreciate the work we have done to make the restaurant experience possible, as well as the work that fossil-fueled machines, specialized workers whose time has been freed up by fossil fuels, as well as the dozens of fossil fuel materials that restaurants use to be efficient and sanitary, it will be much more meaningful. And we will consider the loss of restaurants and other joys when people talk about rapidly eliminating fossil fuel use. Or consider shelter. While 200 years ago, shelter involved constant anguish and labor, today the average person can acquire a shelter that has comforts and capabilities that go far beyond its exceptional abilities to protect us from climate and predators. A rare appreciation of modern shelter was uttered by the title character in the Netflix miniseries Dracula. Dracula wakes up after a few hundred years and is in awe of a poorer-than-average British homeowner. Dracula, you're clearly very wealthy. Kathleen, wealthy? Dracula, yes. Well, look at all this stuff. All this food. The moving picture box. And that thing outside. Bob calls it, a car? And this treasure trove is your house. Kathleen, it's a dump. Dracula, Kathleen, I've been a nobleman for 400 years. I've lived in castles and palaces among the richest people of any age. Never, never have I stood in greater luxury than surrounds me now. This is a chamber of marvels. There isn't a king or queen or emperor that I have ever known or eaten who would step into this room and ever agree to leave it again. I knew the future would bring wonders. I did not know it would make them ordinary. The future has made wonders ordinary because the future is an empowered human environment. in which fossil-fueled machine labor and freed-up mental labor can produce unimaginable amounts of value for us. And fossil fuel materials could make a modern chamber of marvels, weatherized, insulated, sanitized, and decorated cost-effectively enough for the typical individual to afford. Fulfilling leisure time. A final amazing aspect of opportunity for fulfillment in our fossil-fueled world that is both unappreciated and completely dissociated from fossil fuels is fulfilling leisure time. In our empowered fossil-fueled world, because fossil-fueled machine labor and mental labor makes us so productive, we can choose to spend enormous amounts of time on leisure activities, and we have many options to choose from. There is a common criticism of the modern world, especially of America, that people are overworked and don't spend enough time on leisure activities, especially if under leisure we include, as I do, our family and other relationships. I think this criticism has validity in certain circumstances, particularly when someone is working extra hours at a job they don't find fulfilling to support purchases they don't find very fulfilling. On the other hand, other people, and I include myself in this category, find their work to be very fun, stimulating, and fulfilling, and thus enjoy working quite a bit more than the standard 40 hours a week. The cases in which people do take insufficient leisure time should not be used to criticize empowered life in general, but rather to remind us of what a wonderful amount of time empowered life frees up, including for truly fulfilling leisure activities. How much leisure time is optimal will vary a lot from person to person, depending on how passionate they are about their work, what stage of their career they are in, their interpersonal goals, and many other factors. One of the most popular options to spend leisure time on is family life. In a world with today's fossil-fueled productive ability, you can have a family that you can spend a lot of non-work time with, which is far different from laboring together with your children on a farm all day. The time freed up for leisure, whether it is spent alone or with family or friends, can be used for an unbelievable variety of activities thanks to the fossil-fueled leisure industry. Today we have industries such as hospitality, tourism, film, entertainment, music, and sports whose overwhelming focus is to give us enjoyable and fulfilling ways of pursuing our leisure time. Such industries did not exist before human empowerment by fossil fuels, except in tiny, mostly exploitative forms where the rich and powerful could afford to spend a lot of time and other people's energy on entertainment. Today, we have tens of millions of people who are thinking for a living about how to make our lives more enjoyable. And yet, how many people in the center of entertainment, Hollywood, have any clue that the existence and ability of their profession is fossil-fueled? One form of fossil-fueled leisure that's important to highlight is the enjoyment of the rest of nature. In part because many anti-fossil fuel groups, such as the Sierra Club, celebrate the joys of spending time in less inhabited parts of nature, it is often believed that fossil fuels and enjoyment of non-human nature are in opposition. This is exactly wrong. It is because of fossil fuels that we have the machine labor and time to travel to and enjoy nature on an unprecedented scale. I'll use my own experience to illustrate. Personally, I am more of a nature person than most, in that I spend abnormal amounts of time swimming in natural bodies of water, especially the Pacific Ocean, lying on warm sand, walking barefoot, and so on. I prefer vacations to places where I get to interact with the rest of nature. And some of my favorite moments are spent alone in nature, snowboarding at the end of the day when I am the only one I can see on the mountain, walking over lava on the Big Island of Hawaii, standing under secluded waterfalls in the Grand Canyon. Where I differ from other nature people is that I don't think of fossil fuels as opposed to these experiences. I recognize that the availability of these experiences that exist today is totally dependent on fossil-fueled machine labor and freed-up time. It is an intellectual crime that our knowledge system renders us clueless about how amazingly opportunity-filled today's world is and how fundamentally that depends on humanity's fossil fueled productive ability. This intellectual crime is so widespread that when we hear proposals to rapidly eliminate fossil fuels and nuclear and hydro, almost no one even thinks about what that will mean for their opportunity to pursue fulfillment, or their ability to be nourished, or their ability to be safe. But now we know the truth. Fossil fuels make our world unnaturally, amazingly, increasingly livable. And more fossil fuels or their equal are necessary to make the world livable for billions more people. And without fossil fuels or their equal, the livability of today's world will collapse, causing apocalyptic levels of suffering and death. With this understanding, we are now in a position to think rationally about the future of fossil fuels, including how to weigh its negative side effects. Fossil fuels increasingly overwhelmed, reduced, and neutralized negative side effects. We now know the answer to the question of this chapter. What are the full current benefits of fossil fuels? They are the ultra-cost-effective machine labor, enormous amounts of freed-up mental labor and materials that radically increase humanity's productive ability and therefore make our naturally deficient, dangerous, low-opportunity, stagnant planet into an unnaturally nourishing, safe, opportunity-filled, progressing world. To put it visually, the full current benefits of fossil fuels are the human flourishing hockey sticks, which would not be anywhere near what they are without the low-cost, on-demand, versatile, global-scale energy fossil fuels have uniquely provided, despite a century of aggressive competition from alternatives. Understanding the fundamentality of ultra-cost-effective fossil fuel energy to the unnatural and increasing livability of our world is crucial context for thinking about the current and future side effects of fossil fuels. Before we consider any future claims about fossil fuel side effects, which will involve many uncertainties, it is crucial to recognize that our knowledge system's account of fossil fuels' present side effects, where the facts are clear, is an unconscionable distortion of reality. Our anti-energy knowledge system presents the current benefits of fossil fuel use as trivial compared with its increasingly overwhelming side effects, which we are told will get increasingly worse over time, especially in the realm of climate. In reality, fossil fuel side effects are overwhelmed by fossil fuel energy's benefits, they are largely reduced by fossil fuel energy's benefits, and they are increasingly neutralized by fossil fuel energy's benefits. Understanding these truths about fossil fuel side effects will actually show that with only one possible exception, CO2, fossil fuels' negative side effects, such as air and water pollution, will inevitably get better over time, meaning that they provide no basis whatsoever for restricting fossil fuel use. Fossil fuel energy side effects are overwhelmed by its benefits. To be sure, fossil fuel use today has negative side effects. Most obviously, it can harm air quality. Sulfur dioxide from burning coal or oil can create smog. Oil refineries can diminish local air quality. I believe there is an important place for government in making laws to limit those side effects. I will discuss this in detail in Chapter 10. And I believe that many of the most prominent side effects of fossil fuels we see, such as the levels of pollution in some Chinese cities, could be limited without compromising energy production. However, even if all of today's negative side effects were unavoidable, there is no question that they are completely overwhelmed by the benefits of fossil fuels. The essential proof that fossil fuel energy's benefits overwhelm its negative side effects is the hydrocarbons in human flourishing hockey sticks. If fossil fuels' negative side effects were anywhere near their benefits, then the hockey sticks would not keep going up and up, and if the side effects outweighed the benefits, as our knowledge system portrays, they would go down. Benefits overwhelming side effects. The case of coal in the 1800s. To understand concretely the extent to which the benefits of fossil fuels overwhelm the side effects, it is instructive to look at the case of coal in England in the 1800s. This case is instructive because, one, the side effects were far, far worse than anything anyone experiences today, and yet we're still overwhelmed by the benefits, and two, designated experts at the time, whose evaluation was not distorted by the anti-impact framework, recognized that the side effects were overwhelmed by the benefits. In the 1800s, coal was a major and fast-growing energy source, heating the stoves that were at the center of every home, which cooked food and protected inhabitants from the deadly cold outside. These coal stoves had a major direct side effect that affected health. The constant coal smoke indoors, which is almost always worse than any outdoor air pollution. Coal stoves also led to plenty of outdoor air pollution. Urban areas were particularly affected, as they were the centers of industrial activity, more coal smoke, and at the same time, densely populated. Pollution was visible, as the smoke dampened the sunlight in cities, darkened the laundry hanging to dry, and blackened trees with soot. Nothing to this extent happens today using fossil fuels, even in the worst parts of China. And yet, even with these side effects, it was widely recognized that coal's benefits were incomparably greater, because most thinkers and people at the time did not operate on the anti-impact framework, instead operating on some version of the human flourishing framework. They looked at coal's overall impact on the world from a human perspective, including the fact that people in a coal-powered world could actually eat reliably and protect themselves from nature's many dangers far more reliably, and found it to be positive. Take Manchester, England, a major industrial city full of coal waste. In Manchester, the smoking chimneys were called the barometer of economic success and social progress. That is not to say that living in smoke was the goal, but it was necessary for most people to have the best possible life. An 1865 comment by William Stanley Jevons, a legendary economist, in his book The Coal Question, captured a pro-human attitude toward the unprecedented human empowerment coal made possible. Coal, in truth, stands not beside, but entirely above all other commodities. It is the material energy of the country, the universal aid, the factor in everything we do. With coal, almost any feat is possible or easy. Without it, we are thrown back into the laborious poverty of early times. Unlike today's designated experts, Jevons did not glorify the natural pre-coal era as a time in harmony with nature. He described it as the laborious poverty of early times. While today we are taught to think of the coal-powered Industrial Revolution as a time of a bad environment, this was not the perspective that people had back then. They had a much more human-centered conception of environment, and they had lived recently enough in a barely altered natural environment that its deficiencies and dangers were well known. They thought of machine labor as a means of improving their environment, improving their world. And they were right to do so. The overwhelming benefit that the coal revolution brought to the life of the average person in England in the 1800s was captured memorably by people who feared running out of coal. When Jevons wrote about coal, he did so in a period where many, including him, were worried about running out of it. A letter in response to an article of his captures how much better people saw their world as being because of coal. Coal is everything to us. Without coal, our factories will become idle, our foundries and workshops be still as the grave, the locomotive will rust in the shed, and the rail be buried in the weeds. Our streets will be dark, our houses uninhabitable. Our rivers will forget the paddle wheel, and we shall again be separated by days from France, by months from the United States. The post will lengthen its periods and protract its dates. 1,000 special arts and manufacturers, one by one, then in a crowd, will fly the empty soil, as boon companions are said to disappear when the cask is dry. The letter responding to Jevons, terrified by the prospect of losing coal, ends in the following way. We shall miss our grand dependence, as a man misses his companion, his fortune, or a limb. Every hour and at every turn, reminded of the irreparable loss. This is the proper attitude to take when cost-effective energy is threatened, to recognize that without it, there is little light at night, no ability to travel quickly, no ability to communicate rapidly, and no modern industry, with all the nourishment, safety, and opportunity modern industry brings. The idea of eliminating coal, the leading source of cost-effective energy in 1800s England, was considered completely out of bounds. Instead, the focus was on reducing and/or neutralizing the negative side effects of cost-effective energy, which, fortunately, fossil fuels did and continue to provide the basis for. Fossil fuel energy's side effects are largely reduced by its benefits. We are fortunate to have had past designated experts, like William Jevons, who looked at fossil fuel side effects in the context of their fundamental benefits to the very livability of this naturally deficient and dangerous world. This fostered the freedom to produce and use fossil fuels, which, among endless other benefits, has led to the benefit of radically reducing fossil fuels' negative side effects. The root cause is the virtuous circle of empowerment, in which fossil-fueled machine labor and the time it frees up for mental labor creates continual innovation, including in cost-effective pollution reduction. Human beings do not like pollution. As we become more empowered and more capable, we tend to use our capabilities to reduce pollution, but without reducing our livelihood in other ways. Thus, the side effects of fossil fuels have become smaller as the benefits of fossil fuels have become greater and greater. For example, as I explained in Chapter 2, air pollution in the U.S. has declined dramatically, even as fossil fuel use has increased. This is one of many examples of increasingly cost-effective pollution reduction, which takes three major forms: transforming side effects into value, reducing side effects through profit-seeking efficiency, and reducing side effects through low-cost pollution control. Transforming negative side effects into value. This is the practice of taking some waste product of fossil fuel use that is negative and transforming it into a positive that one can make money off of. For example, today's amazing oil-based materials were developed by using oil waste products, parts of a barrel of oil that weren't useful for illumination and used to be dumped in lakes. 2. Reducing negative side effects through profit-seeking efficiency. Side effects at any given time can't always be transformed into value, but they can often be reduced by profit-seeking efficiency. For example, vast increases in the efficiency of coal burning over the last century and a half have been motivated by the desire to get more energy per lump of coal, and have had the huge benefit of generating far less pollution per lump of coal. 3. Reducing side effects through low-cost pollution control. Sometimes it is not directly profitable to use technology to reduce side effects, but the reduction can be done at a relatively low cost with a large pollution prevention benefit. For example, modern coal technology has many different relatively low-cost means of reducing pollutants, ceramics filters or fabric filtration systems to prevent undesirable substances from getting into the air, ingenious processes that use chemical agents such as limestone to bind pollutants and prevent them from escaping, and mechanical devices like wet or dry scrubbers to remove unwanted elements from coal steam, and there are many others. Thanks to cost-effective pollution control technology, coal has been getting healthier and cleaner since the 1800s, and today, places that are home to coal plants, such as North Dakota, have such low emissions from their coal plants that the effect on their air quality is negligible. Fossil fuel energy's side effects are increasingly neutralized by its benefits. The fact that fossil fuels' benefits to the livability of our world far overwhelm its side effects, and the fact that fossil fuels are driving the reduction of most of their negative side effects, means that for most of fossil fuel side effects, such as air and water emissions, these do not justify whatsoever policies of reducing, let alone eliminating, fossil fuel use, only passing proper laws to minimize side effects. I will discuss what policies should guide lawmaking around pollution in Chapter 10. In addition, the fossil fuel reduction and fossil fuel side effects means that the unempowered world has the ability to empower with far fewer side effects than the empowered world has experienced. The only side effect of fossil fuels that we can't be sure is reducible is CO2. Unlike fossil fuels' other side effects, CO2 aggregates in the atmosphere, so new CO2 emissions will lead to higher CO2 levels. And as I will explain in Chapter 6, there is no remotely low-cost method of capturing CO2 on a global scale. But insofar as there are non-reducible negative side effects of rising CO2 levels, I will explore the evidence for this in Chapters 8 and 9, fossil fuels still have the potential ability to neutralize those side effects along with any other negative side effects they have. By neutralizing a side effect, I mean not reducing or eliminating the effect itself, whether CO2 emissions or sulfur dioxide, but reducing or eliminating the negative consequences of that effect. For example, imagine that the use of fossil fuels has increased the rate of certain cancers by 1%. I will discuss problems with such claims in Chapter 10. The increased incidence of cancer would have been neutralized and overwhelmed by the incredible cancer fighting and cancer prevention abilities of our fossil-fueled world. In the realm of CO2, whatever negative impacts there have been of rising CO2 levels so far, it is a fact that thanks to fossil-fueled climate mastery, discussed in Chapter 2, and in much more depth in Chapter 7, we are far safer from climate danger than ever. Any negative side effect has been neutralized and overwhelmed. Whenever we think about the side effects of fossil fuels, we need to keep in mind fossil fuel energy's own proven ability to overwhelm, reduce, and neutralize its own side effects, and recognize that the current benefit of fossil fuels, the unprecedented and increasing livability of our world, far, far overwhelms its current negative, decreasing, and increasingly neutralized negative side effects. Unfortunately, our anti-impact knowledge system gives us none of this context. Denying fossil fuels benefits to the point that it presents the absurd picture of our unnaturally amazing fossil-fueled world as an unnaturally bad world made bad by fossil fuels' overwhelming side effects. Our knowledge system's pseudoscientific benefit denial via studies and externality calculations. While I have already discussed our knowledge system's general benefit denial with regard to fossil fuels, and how that leads to the absurd view that fossil fuel side effects overwhelm their benefits, I want to bring to your attention two forms of this benefit denial to be especially on the lookout for because they appear to be scientific, but are actually crudely irrational. Both involve brazenly denying that the benefits of fossil fuels overwhelm, as well as reduce and/or neutralize, their negative side effects. And you can be sure that both are involved in future projections about fossil fuels' harms. These are 1. Benefit-denying negative studies. 2. Benefit-denying externality claims. Benefit-denying negative studies. A benefit-denying negative study is any research document that looks at some side effect of fossil fuel use, often air pollution, and uses it to claim that fossil fuels as such are killing people or shortening lives. Take one of the top stories of 2021, which was that fossil fuel air pollution causes 1 of 5 premature deaths. The study behind this claim, like many other such studies, focuses on air emissions from fossil fuels in isolation and then claims that, were it not for those air emissions, people would live years longer. In Chapter 10, I will discuss some of the fallacies involved in such claims about the air pollution itself, but even if it were true that air emissions had a shortening effect on people's lives to anywhere near this extent, what about the far greater lengthening effects of fossil fuels, such as all the averted deaths from malnutrition, lack of sanitation, lack of hospitals, and lack of all the other wonderful life-lengthening features of our modern fossil-fueled world? Because our knowledge system is saturated with benefit denial when it comes to fossil fuels, it's considered perfectly acceptable to claim that fossil fuels are shortening lives in China when fossil fuels have driven the industrialization that has increased life expectancy by 10 years in the last four decades. It is also considered perfectly acceptable to ignore that for billions of people, fossil fuel use has replaced far dirtier energy from wood and animal dung. Thus, we are given the impression that if we get rid of fossil fuels, we'll simply lose air pollution without losing benefits. Any accurate study of fossil fuels' effects on life expectancy would unequivocally conclude that fossil fuels lengthen 5 out of 5 lives. That we never hear this illustrates once again how worthless our anti-impact, anti-energy, and ultimately anti-human knowledge system is at giving us information about what actually advances human flourishing. The same basic dynamic of benefit denial is at work in claims about what are called the externalities of fossil fuels. Benefit-denying externality claims. In more intellectual publications and forums, there is an almost universal claim that the market doesn't properly price the externalities of fossil fuels, which translates into government should take action to make fossil fuels far more expensive to discourage their use and to make the world a better place. As popular as this claim is, it involves two massive fallacies. One, ignoring the positive externalities of fossil fuels, and two, ignoring the massive unpriced benefits, or consumer surplus, of fossil fuels. In modern economics, an externality is a side effect of an economic activity that affects those not taking part in the economic activity. Externalities can be positive or negative. A simple illustration of positive and negative externalities is hydroelectric energy, which involves damming a flowing river. A developer might build a dam for the purpose of generating electricity and selling it to nearby residents. But because the process of generating that electricity leads to a more controllable, steady river flow, nearby residents also gain massive benefits they didn't pay for: more protection from flooding and less likelihood of the river drying up. Those are positive externalities. On the other hand, that dam may decrease the population of salmon, driving up local salmon prices. That's a negative externality. Obviously, if we're calculating externalities, we have to look at both positive and negative externalities. And if we do that with fossil fuels, the positive externalities prove to be incalculably massive. Take the classic positive externality of investing in research and development. As the International Monetary Fund puts it, research and development, R&D, activities are widely considered to have positive effects beyond those enjoyed by the producer that funded the R&D. This is a huge understatement, as R&D can have staggering positive externalities, such as all the positive externalities involved in Henry Ford's R&D that led to the moving assembly line, which ended up making dozens of whole industries around the world more productive, benefiting everyone around the world. And nothing has caused more investment in research and development than ultra-cost-effective energy from fossil fuels. To take just one example, our lives are years and years longer because of all the medical research that fossil fuels have made possible. Yet this is never discussed under externalities, only negatives. There are many other positive externalities of fossil fuels that are almost never discussed, including, as I will discuss in Chapter 9, some clear benefits of fossil fuel side effect of CO2 emissions for plant growth, including crop growth, as well as clear benefits to warmer temperatures in many places where cold-related deaths far, far exceed heat-related deaths. To not consider these is pure benefit denial, regardless of whether you use a word like externalities. The denial of fossil fuels' positive externalities is only part of the distortion involved in claiming that the price of fossil fuels does not account for their negative externalities, and that if it did, the world would use far less fossil fuel. The other distortion is the assumption that the price we pay for fossil fuels reflects their full value to us and to the rest of the world. This is not remotely true. Consider, what price would you be willing to pay, if necessary, for the oil fuel needed to helicopter your child to a nearby hospital? You might be willing to pay everything you have. And yet, in today's world, you have to pay only a few dollars a gallon. The principle here, ignored in claims that the price of fossil fuels needs to include its negative externalities, is that prices are not measures of the full value of things to us. Everyone who pays a price regards the good or service they purchase as more valuable than the price they pay. Sometimes, as in the helicopter example, the price is incredibly low compared with the value. The difference in value is often, in economics, called the consumer surplus. If the prices we paid for fossil fuels accounted for all of the value we get from them, including but not limited to their positive externalities, we would be giving significant chunks of our life savings to the fossil fuel industry. Remember that the next time you hear the smug but inane refrain that the prices we pay for fossil fuels do not account for their negative externalities. The invocation of studies and externalities to deny fossil fuels benefits is just a more sophisticated version of the crude fraud that our anti-impact, anti-energy knowledge system perpetrates, denying the fundamental benefit of fossil fuels, including ultra-cost-effective fossil-fueled machine labor, freed-up mental labor, and fossil fuel materials, to the amazing, unnatural, and increasing livability of our world. Again, if you want to know how the benefits and side effects, including positive and negative externalities, balance out, think about the hydrocarbons and human flourishing hockey sticks. When we look at the world's massive use of fossil fuels from a human flourishing perspective, absent our knowledge system's anti-impact framework, delicate nurture assumption, and benefit denial, this is what we must conclude. The current benefit of the world's massive fossil fuel use is a radical increase in humanity's productive ability, and therefore the world's livability. A productive ability and livability that will be lost, with apocalyptically deadly consequences if we rapidly eliminate fossil fuels without a true replacement. This fact is the essential foundation on which all thinking about the future of fossil fuels, including potential future alternatives and potential future side effects of CO2, should be based.